I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, are there any agenda deletions, additions, or changes of sequence?
Yes, if I could, I'd like to ask that we move, move the student appeal for English 1A up to the first order of business.
Okay.
So that would be immediately following the vote on expulsions.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any others? Superintendent's report?
None before I'll come.
Okay. Our next item is public comments, and if you could take a moment to read the message on the board, we welcome you and would like you to speak, but we are not able to respond. Is there anyone who would like to make a comment?
I'm a little surprised that the champagne is not flowing from my and frankly, I want you to know that the beer is on me over at the Fort and the Patriot after this board meeting. So, I want to express my genuine thanks to the wonderful leadership of Patty Treat and Tim Madsen and everybody else that worked so hard to make this possible. It's very heartwarming to see people step into those kinds of roles. And once again, Santa Cruz has proved the exception to that the entire state and the country. And we have a whole lot of people that really have the best interests of our kids at heart. I'm going to try to be brief. I only have four items tonight, so and that's the first one. Again, I all the nights and all the people that phone banked and walked the districts and so forth to make this success, I most appreciate it. And it's a lot to see me into. Secondly, you all have a little flyer there about my next door neighbor, and that's Lexi Williams. And Lexi is going to be singing at Carnegie Hall. And I'm just so pleased, and I've known Lexi ever since she was a baby. As a matter of fact, I knew her mother when her mother was a baby. But this goes to show all of you, our emphasis on the arts and so forth. How many high school students can say that they sang at Carnegie Hall? This district has covered itself in glory. It's really wonderful. Thirdly, I had an occasion to see the Weidmans over the weekend. And I'm sure that all of you know the Weidmans. Ken gave so many years of his life to helping the school district, especially financially. Their daughter is in her final year of Harvard Law School and will finish up in June. And again, that goes to show that if you really work with public schools and work with the teachers, you can have just outstanding, exceptional kinds of results. And I'm sure the Weidmans had a lot to do with that as well. But I remember very well when their daughter was out at Soquel High School. So. And finally, I have a godchild. She's a little Hispanic girl. And she had a whole lot of difficulty when she was at Branson Boarding and before that when she was at Galt. And unfortunately, she has Asperger's. And I want you to know that thanks to a very caring staff and Eileen Brown and a whole lot of other people, she is a straight-A student at Soquel High School. And her mother who's a single mother and also has a baby, couldn't be prouder of her daughter. And I think it's wonderful that we can be so many things to so many people. You know, besides the language barriers, you know, to have the affliction of Asperger's. I'm sure that Dr. Coonerty knows all about that. It's a horrible thing. So, again, thank you so much. That's it. No more.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak tonight?
Pardon me?
Thank you. Okay, the superintendent's report is next.
Tonight, I want to express my gratitude to our community for their continued support of students. We have the initial results of the ONP campaign with 71% voting yes on O and 76% voting yes on P, and this is a win for kids. Again, our community has been generous, and I appreciate the board's commitment to making this happen for our students, and I really appreciate the great work of the campaign committee with Patty and Allison and Tim's leadership and Deb's support on the steering committee and everybody else's work in the various ways that you've provided support, the leadership team, the teachers. It was fun to be there last night to see the results come in together and see the fruit of the collaboration that was really a reflection of the work of the community on behalf of our kids. And I just am grateful to everyone involved, and I'm grateful for our kids. We are going to be, and I'll send this out to the school board, we're going to hold a celebration on the 30th of November at the clubhouse at Harvey West at 6 o'clock. It'll be a fiesta dinner for all the folks who worked on the event, so please mark your calendars, and there'll be an invitation that does go out formally. The last 2 days, I've attended the Gates Foundation convening of implementation networks. These are all the grant awardees from the state. Networks of schools working together on a specific area of focus around Common Core and college and career readiness. The Santa Cruz County College commitment is one of 10 districts. 70 networks applied originally, and it was exciting to be able to be with those 10 networks. We learned a lot in the last 2 days, and one of the benefits, I think, of the way the Gates Foundation has arranged this is we're going to have opportunities to network with these other networks throughout the 3 years of the grant cycle to learn from each other, to share resources, and I'm excited about what this will mean for our county moving forward. They also gave us an extension on our planning grant. It was one of the things we were hoping to get, because as we worked to prepare the implementation grant, we're finding that we need more time to really do the needs assessment work that we want to do. It took us a little bit longer to convene the group of teachers, cross-county representative group. We had the first meeting this last month. There are 2 meetings scheduled in December. But in order to make sure that we have practitioners' voices and what we decide to work on is really important. So that's they've given us an extension. I had a meeting with the executive director of S4C and Christina Cuevas from the Community Foundation this month as well. And we discussed ways that they might be able to support the county with their efforts on math achievement countywide. We'll continue to be in conversation with the foundation as we conduct the needs assessment as part of the Gates Planning Grant. And they're committed to helping us in addition to the resources that we're going to receive from Gates. The Natural Bridges site, PCS completed their move this last week. We still have fire restoration work that needs to happen. And that's slated to begin the second week in December. We are in conversation with a potential tenant for that site, but it's been requested we keep that tenant's name confidential at this time. Because that's not confirmed, we are still exploring other options, and it's our plan to provide some possible scenarios to the board by the end of January. This last Friday and Saturday, Allison and I attended 2 days of CSBA's Master's in Governance training in Sacramento. The focus of the 2 days was on the board's role in school finance, human resources, and negotiations. You know, it was really well done, and the materials are good. So if anyone is interested, I encourage you, if you're interested in attending the trainings, please do, and we'll help you do that. But if you'd just like to see the materials from the trainings, I'm happy to share those with you as well. So just let me know. And that's the end of my report for this evening.
Thank you. Students are next.
First, I'd like to say I'm glad I'm back. I missed the last two meetings, and Ellen and I were saying that basically the student report could start with, everyone is sick. Uh-huh. A lot of people have been out, including even teachers. The fall play wrapped up while I was gone for Harbor, and now students involved in theater are starting prepping for the fall showcase, their next performance. In the last week, fall sports have mostly wrapped up to the normal fizzle of Harbor sports, although the girls volleyball and both water polo teams picked up at the very end of their seasons. College application season is in full swing. Many of us are still working on them, although some students used early action from this last weekend. And then the island holiday of last week really threw people off. Our whole schedules are all weird, and everyone's ready for the Thanksgiving holiday. And I have a clarification thing that I'd like to bring up. Graduation paperwork and cap and gown order forms are due on Friday. And as students, we've been told that we need to purchase these items. And in board policy, it says that the superintendent may require graduating students to wear ceremonial attire, such as cap and gown at the ceremony. That was from 2011. And in 2013, there was a CDE memo that said schools could not force a fee on students if the cap and gown is required at the ceremony, and they must provide caps and gowns if students wish. And the students and me would like to hear about that.
So one of the things that the school district does is if a student doesn't want to purchase their gown and they don't want to keep it, that a gown will be provided. They just have to return it.
Okay, so counselors need to be told that. Because I was told by my counselor that they have to purchase it.
Thank you.
Okay, hi, I'm also glad to be back and more or less healthy. Since my last report, Sam Kusai had a spirit week, which saw themed dress days. I found our Thursday theme particularly interesting, which called for freshmen to dress up as babies or toddlers, sophomores to dress like teens, which they managed, juniors to act as though they were having a midlife crisis, which is now a state of life, apparently, and seniors as senior citizens. The Spirit Week culminated in a rally and our homecoming game. And then also our school play ran for 2 weekends. Also, you can't take it with you. I think we've discussed this before. We have a lot of similarities with Harbor right now. And now theater kids are turning to the second of the 3 productions we will have this year for the first time in, I think, at least a decade, that we'll be having 3 shows this year with San Francisco Theater. Mm-hmm. So we've selected a directing team for the winter musical, which is going to be High School Musical, and auditions will be held the week after Thanksgiving break. Seniors, in addition to their college applications, are looking at scholarship applications, and the even more daunting submission of senior quotes, the deadline is just passed. Veterans Day was a nice break, and our Excel schedule allowed us to pick up seamlessly where we left off on Tuesday. The Excel schedule, and as Erin said, so many people are sick, so we're getting lots of lectures about washing our hands, and teachers are starting classes with, okay, who's out today? So that's about it.
Thank you. And board reports. Deb?
I guess I would just like to echo Chris's sentiment and thank the community profusely for continued support and thank everybody who volunteered their time on the Parcel Tax campaign. And also just to continue Aaron's thought on the boys' water polo team from Harbor won 3 games this year, which is 3 more than they've won in the previous 3 years. So I'm very excited. I have a freshman in my house, and I'm very excited about that. So that's my report.
Pretty much did what Deb said on all counts, but I want to give a personal thank you to Patty and to Allison, who's not here, and to Deb, and to my colleagues on the board for all the time and hours that they put into making the passing of the OMP possible. I just appreciate and trust that you guys filled in for me when I could not, and helped pitch in with the community to make it happen. So congratulations to everybody, especially to our students, and thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have 2 things. One, good day for us. Congratulations. Really good day. And for everyone who worked very hard on that. And secondly, I would like to mention that the world often feels like a very confusing place, and given the tragedy in Paris and, frankly, elsewhere, although Paris is perhaps more part of our collective imaginations, part of our internal geography, so we think about it more. It's nice to know that we can accomplish something in our little backwater provincial sort of part of the world. And then finally, Sister Cities is doing something really outstanding. I always don't want to take someone, my wife and I don't want to take someone for 8 days, but there are about 7 or 8 lawyers from Ukraine who are here. And they're here, they're defense attorneys, and they're learning about our judicial system, spending a lot of time in court. And although I can often be cynical about our judicial system, which is imperfect at best, they're thrilled to see that judges and lawyers do, in fact, stay on the up and up, and we have a functioning judicial system. So all in all, given the balance of things, a good week for us, and we've made a contribution to the furtherment of civilization. Good for Santa Cruz, really.
I, too, would like to echo the sentiments of Chris and the other board members when I want to say from the bottom of my heart thank you to our community for their support of our children, and how much brighter the future will be for the district with this passing of these parcel measures. I did, as busy as everybody was, manage to get to some sporting events, and I really do want to say I attended the stump game, and congratulations to Santa Cruz, who now has the stump for 2 years, and I'm happy to know that because Eric Redding is spot on to always make sure the scores are put on the stump, so that's wonderful. But I also wanted to show appreciation to the Harbor football team, because as a parent watching your student play, it's really difficult to watch a contact sport, and I know that the students at Harbor wanted that program desperately, because there were, I think, 16 children who participate. So that means those boys play both sides of the ball all day long with 3 subs. So for the parents' point of view, that's tough, but that's what the kids want, and I think we have to acknowledge that, and we have to show some respect to them for their heart. I would like to invite the community to also enjoy some plays. They can go to Soquel High for the Laramie Project the 1st and 2nd week of December. And I'd like to congratulate Santa Cruz High for their Water Polo League Championship, and to congratulate Soquel High for the 20 years of league championships that they had. This was the first year that they surrendered their title, not winning league or tournament, but they were a very young team, and it seemed to be a relief to the students to not have to carry that crown anymore. So they're ready to start over. So anyway, it was a good year for fall sports, and I was happy to be able to see part of it. So thank you.
Well, I think I'm probably going to butcher this a little bit, but I wanted to mention that Santa Cruz High's, I think it's the track and field, the girls' track and field, has for the first time ever gone into the finals. And yay, Santa Cruz High, that's alma mater in my family. But it's also quite impressive that they have done that against teams that have been the stars in this county for a long time. So I wanted to give that credit and pass it on to them, okay? I guess it's you passing on to them, actually. I also want to thank the administration for the role they played in getting ONP passed, which has not been what has happened previously to the extent that it's happened this time. So I think that I really want to shout out to the fact that we have an administration that is that involved and was there calling and doing what needed to be done in terms of getting these passed. I also wanted to comment that I learned something, that things change, and we should never use past assumptions when our gut tells us something is needed. Because I have heard since I moved back to Santa Cruz, I've heard that you can't get parcel taxes passed on athletics, and that you can't get parcel taxes for ROP. When Chris and I were at one of the meetings, community meetings at one of the elementary schools, the elementary parents said, we need athletics for our kids when they get to high school. We need it for safety, we need it for involvement. And it was, I thought to myself, something's changing here. You know, the people are beginning to make the connections of what athletics can offer. And sure enough, our community supported athletics and ROP, and I'm an extremely happy person because I spent a lot of time worrying about what we were going to do if that didn't happen. And I want to thank the community for it. And I wanted to say something that went along with what Jeremy said. I read a quote from Dalai Lama today, and I may butcher it a little bit, but basically he said, stop just asking God to find peace and help us with these bad situations. These situations were human-made, and they must be human-cured. Human beings need to give care and love to those around them first, and then from that we can change the world. And I think that that's some of my feeling about how we did ONP and basically how we're trying here to run this district, is to think of here first and ourselves first and what steps we can take to make the world a better place given the craziness we see around us. So thank you. That's it.
I would like to congratulate Patty and Allison for doing such an amazing job co-chairing with Tim. You all worked in a very dedicated way, and it made a difference. So thank you for that. I attended a Schools Plus gathering and will be reading applications for grants next month. Last year, a number of our teachers received grants, and I'm hoping that happens again. Sunday, I spent a couple hours with the WASC review team at Delta. Their initial impression was positive as they spoke with parents and students, teachers, and the board, and they particularly raved about the 500-page self-study that Delta did. yesterday, I had the opportunity to step into the math and science classes at Grand Forty Middle School. I saw some wonderful teaching, and really thank Chris and Kristen for going with me and doing that. I met with Amy Hedrick Farr yesterday to finalize our agenda for the Wellness Committee meeting, which is tomorrow night, 6:30 at Harbor High School Library, and everybody's invited. And that ends my report. Our next item is the approval of the minutes for the regular meeting on October 28th.
So moved.
Jeremy moves.
Second.
And Sheila seconds.
I was talking.
Sorry. Oh, are there any questions or discussion? No? All in favor? Oh, students, you abstain? Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? And now the minutes of the regular meeting on November 4th.
Move to approve the revised minutes that were sent out. I got...
Yes. There was a formatting problem with the original.
Yeah, it showed up something. I was like, I was at that meeting, I think.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so move approval of the revised.
Okay, and second?
Second.
Okay, Judy seconds. And students, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? That's a 6-0. The consent agenda is next. Are there any items that board would like pulled for discussion?
Yes, Sheila. But I can't find it. Oh, there it is. 8.1.7.1.2.
8.1.7.1.2 over facility use agreement.
Any other items? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Discussion? Public comments?
Okay. What's the item number again?
It's 8.1.7.1.2, the FUA use of facilities by PCS.
Oh, I see.
Okay, this is a roll call. Student recommendation?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And now item 8.1.7.1.2.
Oh, God, that was good. All right, I basically, I don't know if this can be done, but I would like to ask for moving this onto the regular agenda, if that's possible, but just basically I want it to be publicly noted and not just part of the consent agenda as to our coming to an agreement with PCS. And I was wondering, Chris, if you could give a short summation of what this means to us.
Our original conversations with PCS around our FUA started 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. We were able to make an agreement that spans the duration of this school year, and what we wanted to do after that, our goal after that, was to make a longer-term agreement about their use of facilities for, this is for their extracurricular programs, because they don't have field space, they don't have theater, they don't have a gymnasium. And in lieu of a Prop 39 request, what we have been able to do is make a multi-year agreement that for 3 years, for the next 3 years, we have a plan for their facilities use in those areas. And we will revisit that probably 2 years from now so that we're ahead of the conversations we plan out. And I believe the district was very generous in its negotiations on this, and we'll continue to work with PCS to make sure that those needs get met in as we plan for their facilities use in the 3 years that this agreement covers.
Thank you. That's all I really needed. I think that it was a lot of hard work in terms of our relationship with PCS, and I think I want it to be not slipped under in the consent agenda, but rather acknowledged, and I appreciate everything you've done to help it make it possible.
And now would you like to move approval for item?
May I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Would that agreement preclude our reopening Natural Bridges School if they were going to use the theater?
They are able to use the facilities, the gym and the field at Natural Bridges after school hours.
Oh, okay.
So it would allow for us to use the facility during school hours for other things.
Thank you so much for that clarification. But the theater is not included.
No, they can rent other theater space that we have, but I think they have an arrangement for theater with another organization.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I so move. Second.
Okay, any further discussion?
Yeah.
Okay,
Chairman? I would also like to congratulate the district office on moving this forward, and I appreciate Sheila asking for this to be pulled and to be made specific. Thank you. Congratulations.
So roll call, student recommendation?
Aye.
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 Aye. Next item is report of actions taken in closed session. Patty?
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard an update on employee discipline, dismissal, release, and complaint. The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsions 1-15-16 and 2-15-16. The Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Assistant Superintendent Molly Parks with directions regarding SCCCE negotiations for 2014-15 and 2015-16. The Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Assistant Superintendent Molly Parks with direction regarding GSCFT adult education negotiations for 2014-15 and 2015-16. The Board of Trustees conferred regarding real property negotiations, and the Board of Trustees will return to closed session after the meeting to hear one more piece.
Thank you. Next item is vote on expulsion 1-15-16. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the expulsion, the suspended expulsion of student 1-15-16 mm-hmm. as presented by Assistant Superintendent of Educational Services.
I second.
Sorry. I think you can also right? do the suspend.
So my motion is to expel the student, and then to this is new to us to do this publicly. So we move to approve the expulsion of student 1-15-16 through the end of the 15-16 school year and suspend the enforcement of the expulsion to allow the student to transfer to Harbor High School.
Okay. And, this, and, Sheila
and I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Yes.
I don't think it's roll call. It's not a.
No.
All in favor? Aye. Okay.
And any opposed or abstentions? Okay. The next one is vote on expulsion 2-15-16.
And if I can, before we begin, we should not be including the school to which.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
Oh. I will move to approve the expulsion of student 2-15-16 through the end of the 15-16 school year and suspend the enforcement of the expulsion.
There is a second.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Moving on. All right, we're going to move up item 8.3.3, our English 1A appeal.
Thank you so much. So tonight I'm bringing to you an appeal from a 12th grade student in our district who has requested that they be allowed to enroll in English 1A at Cabrillo in lieu of the AP Language and Composition course in their school. And the basis for this appeal is that the AP course does not meet their academic goals. The student first followed the protocol, which is to go to their counselor at their high school and request concurrent enrollment and I've included in your cover, we do have a policy, 6172, that allows us to approve a limited number of students to concurrently enroll in community college, CSU, UC. And the basis for that approval is when it's determined to be in the student's best interest, they're prepared. And in this case, I believe both the school counselor and then when it was brought to my attention, we agreed that the student was very much prepared to take the coursework at Cabrillo. But there is a clause within our policy that states that the course, that we can approve this if the course is not available within our school district. We're very proud of the course offerings that we have. We recognize that there are some courses that we don't offer. For example, in world language, we offer only Spanish and French at one of our high schools. But in this case, we do offer a full array of English courses to meet the four-year requirement. And included in that is not only AP language and composition, but AP literature. So the student brought this first to their high school and was denied on the basis that the student hadn't availed themselves of the coursework that is currently in their high school. The student came to me and appealed that decision, and upon reviewing the board policy, it's my recommendation that we deny their appeal, as they will have an opportunity to take the English class at their high school. It should be noted that the AP language and composition focuses more on nonfiction text, whereas the English 1A class does provide more of a literature basis. The high school also offers literature classes for seniors as well, but the student has come to us requesting that in lieu of taking coursework at their high school, they take the English 1A.
Are there questions? Sheila.
Okay, I don't quite understand this, Angela. Oops. I don't quite understand this because, okay, so first of all, English 1A at Cabrillo isn't literature. If I understand correctly, the student's saying that he wants to, there's not enough literature at the high school, so he wants to go to English 1A. He wants to take English 1A so that he'll have more literature, which he won't. Am I missing something here?
No, I asked the same question. The student could have enrolled in an AP literature class. However, that takes some preparation and planning because there is a homework component to it. So it makes it difficult to switch your plans if you haven't been planning on that from the previous year. So AP literature, there's an extensive summer reading component.
So the student could have taken, they could take either or, but the student couldn't take it because the student hadn't done the summer reading. Whether they did the summer reading or not, it would seem like they're asking to take the same class that, I mean, it's not a literature class, English 1A. So I don't understand the benefit.
English 1A has much more of a focus on literature than AP language and composition. When I reviewed that, the student I met, we looked at this, and the student is absolutely correct. The AP language and composition is more focused on functions and writing, and there's very little literature involved. So when the student brings this to us, they're pointing out that the English 1A would give them access to a more literature-based course. And that is what they're looking to take.
Okay, I have my doubts, but I'll take your word for it. So you're saying that the policy is that it's a policy that we do not allow that if the student requests it, unless there's something they can't take in the schools. Is that correct?
Correct. So our counselors first look at is this a course that currently exists in the course catalog? Can they help the student access the course through? There are a few situations where the course is offered through the high school. However, the student's schedule doesn't allow them to take the course. And so then the counselor can, on a case-by-case basis, approve the
student. And the rationale for not allowing it easily is?
No, we want our students to take full advantage of the courses that we have while they're still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really our rationale. And if we aren't able to offer those classes, then that's a discussion point for us moving forward. But we want to first be able to offer students the courses they need.
Okay. Are there other questions?
Is this an appropriate time to offer clarification about the classes? Okay. So with my understanding as a student enrolled in both the language and composition and literature and composition, is the AP literature class requires summer reading and focuses on literature and preparing students for the AP exam. And the AP, we call it AP Comp, is again like nonfiction based and focuses on writing. I am enrolled in both classes, so that's certainly a possibility. And I believe we're in the handout we did at the beginning of the year, whenever we're talking about our intent to take these classes, there's a protocol that you can follow if you are newly enrolled in that class and haven't had the entire summer to make up the summer reading. I think you're allotted like 4 weeks to read the two books and complete the assignment. Personally, I did mine in the 1 week before school started.
Ella?
So it's definitely possible. I hope that.
Thank you for the clarification. Okay. Dee Dee?
I also just want to get clarity. So the student is enrolled in the composition, which is the writing AP course, but would rather take a nonfiction literature course at Carrillo, and the student is not interested in taking the regular English 4 senior course?
Correct.
Which also has nonfiction, or does not?
I'm sorry, I think I've used those terms alternately. So the English 1A provides more of a literature base, whereas the AP language and composition is more of a nonfiction and writing focus. And the student expressed to me that they are very interested in the literature component offered through English 1A. And the student is also successfully enrolled in other courses at Cabrillo and is doing well. So I think that's another factor, and something that is part of our board policy is looking at when a student is well prepared to take a class and has shown that they can do so successfully. I'm really only recommending denial of this appeal on the basis of the fact that we do offer AP literature classes. We do offer senior literature classes, and so the student could avail themselves of those classes.
Thank you. Motion.
So moved.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, we had a chance to make comments or ask questions. How about the public?
My name is Murphy Guidis. I am a current attendee of Santa Cruz High. I'm the senior in question that's appealing for English 1A. To offer clarification upon the dispute about the difference in coursework, AP composition currently at Santa Cruz, the AP course is restricted to language composition based on the expository essay and nonfiction. The English 1A course does allow flexibility to involve fictitious works of literature within it, as well as focuses on the composition and expository essay, which is my main interest, to be able to allow not only nonfiction, but fiction to be referenced and explained upon to elaborate upon an argument. Now that that's out of the way, I would also have a separate speech. To preface this, I would like to say I have an amazing amount of respect for the faculty here at Santa Cruz and within the school system itself. However, I do believe that education in its essence does not only include course content, but how the student, in this case me, learns and is able to absorb and master the material that's presented to them. And I've found that this includes an atmosphere and rigor that I have been able to receive and have at Cabrillo College. And any of you could look at my academic record. I'm an Lambda valedictorian. I have straight A's. I am extremely successful academically and enjoy learning beyond belief. And I've been offered an amazing basis academically at Santa Cruz High School. However, I found that the school environment, school and class environment at Cabrillo has enlightened me to an amazing set of studying skills and how a college campus and class environment works that I consider as essential as any coursework, because I will be moving away in less than 9 months. I have to understand how a college works and what needs to be done to get courses, all of this is as essential as any coursework that could have been given to me. And that I believe that the best course for me isn't going to only offer the material of the class, but how to better prepare me for college as well. And that the freedom given by this English 1A course will help instill an independence and responsibility for when I do move away. So with this information, I do believe that I have availed myself of all courses available at Santa Cruz High. Further clarification, I'm no longer eligible to take the AP Literature course, as I was not aware that I would be attempting to take this English 1A course. And so I've surpassed the four-week period allotted to me to make up the summer reading. So I'm no longer able to take the literature component that would be necessary to prepare me for an English 1B at any given college. AP composition is also not accepted by three of the colleges I'm applying to, as well as the AP composition does not involve the nonfiction portion, the fiction portion that I'm looking for, but does involve the nonfiction. And that I would like to say that I've always loved learning and would never want to lose any part of it, including preparation for college, not only academically, but mentally, as I learned to be more responsible and self-reliant, and that I would trust this board to not only do what's right for me on academic content, but for me as a student and developing citizen. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak?
Hi, I'm Murphy's mom, and I just wanted to make a short statement about he's worked really hard at trying to get himself into this course and made a huge effort of persistence to try to create momentum. And so he's worked very hard as a kid, and his school achievements prove this. He's exhausted Santa Cruz High School's ability to provide the advanced classes he seeks. He needs the type of classes to further his academic development for the colleges that he's currently applying for. His persistence and vigor for fairness is obvious. Please view this as a pursuit of learning and use your power to help advance this young person's academic career. As we all know, his kind of work ethic and love of learning is rare, and it should be nurtured. Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak?
Can we ask questions of them or no?
Okay, are there other comments from the board? Is there a motion?
I have a clarifying question, and I don't know if I'm allowed. So, colleges aren't accepting the course as a for the test, like the credits, or I'm not quite understanding the.
I'm glad you asked that because I think there's a belief that AP classes count as college credit when you receive a 3 or a 4 and above on the test. However, the private schools don't accept them as equivalent credits. So I think our UCs and our CSUs will take those courses and they will count towards college credit, whereas our private schools don't. They prefer that our students take a rigorous class, but they don't count. And I believe, I hope it's okay if I share this, that the universities that Murphy has applied to will not give equivalent credit.
So it's credit, but not the AFG requirement. It's not the requirement pieces.
It's not even credit, yeah.
Okay, Sheila?
Okay. I'm for everybody following their way for learning, but there's something I don't understand here, which is what the problem is that the student would have to go to college to take the college English 1A at college. In other words, it's not like they're being blocked in terms of their future. They're just doing it when they're at college. Am I right about that?
You are. As with the AP classes counting at a CSU, an English 1A class would count as equivalent credit at a private school. It could be on that transcript, it would apply as credit, as part of their undergrad credit, in addition to meeting the high school requirement.
Okay. Right. So it's a decision as to whether to allow that to happen while the student's still in high school, or whether to assume that they can actually learn something at the high school level before they go to college.
Yeah, it really comes down to our concurrent enrollment policy is in place to allow students to take courses that are not offered as part of our program. And we believe that we offer the equivalent to English 1A through a literature course.
Thank you.
Yeah, point of clarification, if said student had taken both of the AP courses offered at Santa Cruz High School, having done the summer reading, and then made this application, would you have been more inclined to approve it?
I believe it's that they were asking for it in lieu of their English class, so absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
Absolutely, yes. Is that what you're saying?
Do we have a motion?
Yes, so moved.
And I second.
Okay, student. Okay,
may I ask a clarification? So you are moving to uphold the denial?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy. And we have a second?
I have a second.
All right, student recommendation?
Nay.
A comment, sir.
It's not a roll call.
Hmm?
It's not a roll call, sir.
No, it's not.
Right.
We did comments, I believe. Do you have another comment?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be voting to uphold the denial, and I appreciate the clarification. I'd like to make it clear that we offer two AP courses in English at the senior level at Santa Cruz High School. They're rigorous courses. Summer reading is involved. If a student, in my opinion, takes both those courses and then wants to take a course over and above, that would be a different matter. But to me, this is sort of like a pretty obvious case closed. Thank you for the clarification.
Annie?
And for me, I'd like to appreciate the student for his academic rigor and for his focus. And I, like Sheila, believe in any path, but I also do know that there is something we say, you can never come home. So while you're young, I would encourage you to do as much as you can with your high school and the students there. So that's my piece to that.
Other comments? Didi.
I want to applaud this student for taking ownership of his own education and moving forward on that. So thank you.
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
And abstained. Okay, we have a 5-1.
5-4-1-1, correct? Mm-hmm. Who's abstaining? You're abstaining?
No, I voted.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you said and abstained, but you were just asking.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I get it now.
Would you repeat the vote, please?
It's
5-1.
One. Opposed or?
One opposed.
Thank you.
And notes from the students.
Okay. Now we'll go back to 8.3.1, our staff report on middle school writing.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome our Director of Curriculum, Jennifer Wildman, and Principal Julia Hodges, and two of our teacher leaders, who are going to be sharing with us tonight a report for information only, but important information about the ways in which at our middle schools we are charting the progress of our students towards post-secondary success in college and career. I'm excited that they're coming tonight to give us this report because I know that they just finished scoring the writing assessments, and so you're going to be hearing from them not only about the process, but about how they're using those results.
Hello, everybody. I'm really happy to be here to present our middle school staff to talk about their writing assessments. I wanted to just mention two quick things before they let you know about their assessment and about writing at their schools. And that is, first, that writing is a really important content area and deserving of a lot of our attention because it touches all content areas in the school. And in fact, that nonfiction writing has been proven over time to be one of the things that we can invest most of our time in, that it actually produces really amazing results for students, because basically, as you know, as an adult, we are often asked to write, and we're most often asked to write nonfiction. And so this was a really important endeavor on their part. I also want to say that what often looks like a product that we're going to show you is really a process that involves lots and lots of people. And first and foremost, it involves our students, because we want our students to be great writers. It certainly involves the teachers, who work very hard to get these assessments in place, to administer them, to instruct our students in writing, and then to score them. It involved, in this case, some new people to our district, some new positions, which are our coaches. And our coaches were instrumental in the leadership around the instruction that goes before students are ever assessed. But I wanted to mention a layer that I don't often mention to you, and that's principal leadership. The instructional leadership, in this case, offered by Julia and in partnership with Kristen, was a really, not just a critical piece of this, but this wouldn't have happened without her. So our principals work really hard, often behind the scenes. I don't thank them enough and let you know about their work, but this really is Julia's project, and I just feel honored to be able to support it and to be able to present Julia, and also Sue and Julia, our coaches, to talk about school-wide writing.
Thank you for having us here tonight. Writing is writing, and having a strong writing program at the middle school level is a passion of mine as an English teacher before I became an administrator. So it's been a lot of fun to be able to work with fellow English teachers as we've done this work. This is Sue Mohan. She works at Grand Sporty Middle School. She's a sixth grade core teacher. And this is Julie McIntyre. She works at Mission Hill Middle School, and she's a seventh grade core teacher. And they're both Common Core coaches at each respective middle school. So to begin with, I don't know if that's controlling this. That's nice. So to begin with, our focus in secondary for our professional development has been focusing on being clear as teachers. So as a staff at Mission Hill, every time we do a presentation or professional development session with our teachers, we always start with a learning goal, why it's relevant, and what our success criteria is. So we thought we'd do that with you tonight so that you know if we're successful in presenting this to you, and that you know if you're successful in receiving the information. So our learning goal for our presentation tonight is that you will know what school-wide writing is and how it is utilized to impact writing instruction and increase student writing proficiency, and that you will also know the ways in which school-wide writing supports our preparation of all students to successfully access post-secondary college and careers. We know that this is relevant and important to our work here at the middle school, because writing assessments are an indicator of student preparation for college and career readiness. We'll talk more about that throughout the presentation. And then our success criteria for you, so you know you've got it when you can. These are the two main indicators. You yourself can define school-wide writing and its purpose. So we'll try to come back to that at the end. You can quiz yourselves. We're not doing an exit ticket, though. We debated about handing it out.
Good thing.
And then also explain how school-wide writing helps prepare students to access college and careers. Okay, next slide. Now we're going to skip this one. Our slides are slightly out of order. We apologize. All right, so our definition for school-wide writing is up here. This is something that we collaborated on ourselves. And school-wide writing is an on-demand summative writing assessment. So on-demand means that kids have to write it in class. They can't take it home to write it. They have a certain amount of time. Usually it's 1 to 2 days, depending on the writing assignment. So it's on-demand summative writing given at each grade level in the fall and then again in the spring. These assessments are Common Core aligned, which is new this year. We hadn't fully aligned them to the Common Core, so we've been doing a lot of work with that.
And in most instances, we are using the ESPAC interim assessments and rubrics. So the purpose for school-wide writing is to formally monitor student writing proficiency, to inform teacher instructional practice, and to increase students' independent writing skills, as well as prepare students for post-secondary college and careers. We're also skipping this
You can just listen to me. So it's nice to see an amazing former student of mine up there. I love that. So I'm going to tell you guys about the revision process. Last spring we got together at Julia's sort of prompting, and we had three teachers at each site that got together to talk about how can we make this more, well, we really had a, good long conversation, but we had three main goals. We wanted to make the school-wide writing assessment really more aligned with our instructional units, and we've done that. We also wanted to make them relevant and aligned, and we did that. We also wanted to shift from a growth model to a teach assess model, which is really what we do in the classroom. And then we also, Julie already hinted at this, but given given the big shifts in assessment that kids are up against right now, we wanted to give them more access to exposure. So we agreed that we pull from the TOM site and use the interim tests, and we did that. So at every grade level at both sites, we used constructive response prompts from the TOM site, so the kids will get more exposed to what they'll be continually exposed to.
I go back to our the sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, the school writing assessments,
So I'll keep talking. So the you talked about nonfiction, and I thought, oh, with the exception of sixth grade, because we actually did narrative writing. So the three main text types that are really focused on in middle school are narrative, argumentative, and explanatory. And at the sixth grade level, we did a story starter, which is perfect for sixth graders. And they had to finish a story. So they were given the beginning of a story and then had to write narratively and continue. And seventh grade?
Hi, thanks for having us to present about this work. So in seventh grade, Mission Hill and B40 did different tasks, and we're going to swap and do the task we didn't do in the spring, which is kind of cool because we got to give both of them a test drive and can inform the other school about what went well, what we would adjust. So at Mission Hill, we did a whole performance task. So students watched a video and read two texts and then wrote an argumentative essay on whether bottled water should be banned in schools. And then at Bread Supporty, the students worked on a slightly shorter writing piece. They read two articles about sleep and then wrote a constructed response, which was a brief explanatory response about the need for sleep and the importance of sleep. And so in the spring, we'll each swap and do the task that we didn't do in the fall.
All right, and then our eighth graders worked on an argumentative piece. They, too, were given the beginning of an argument. They already had a claim, and they had to develop the argument using student notes that were given to them as well. So they had to read through these different pieces and then continue the response. So they had to write body paragraphs for a response that had been started, and that was on the importance of public libraries. All right.
You want me to
go? So go next, and then next again. And then one more. Mm-hmm. There. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the data. So. I can read it, or you can. But this is the data from B40, and I think one of the things I just really want to say is, of course, we want more than six. I'll just speak for the sixth grade site at B40, sixth grade team. It'd be great if that 61% were higher, and at the same time, I feel like this is a real work in progress, and it's not like we stop teaching. So we expect that we continue writing through the year, even though it's not a narrative focus. One of the things that we'll do, and you can see, the slide is a little bit covered up on this side, but one of the things we noticed was that
it's difficult for sixth graders to write really good stories. And they use good narrative technique, but their stories weren't amazing. And part of what made them difficult to read was their organization. And we are now on an explanatory text unit, which fits well for organization of ideas and more coherence in their writing. So we feel like what we're going to do next will just continue to build on what we've already done.
Should be very nice. Oh, wait, I don't think our slide's on there. That's why we didn't hand
your data is
it's,
on
there,
but your
slide. Oh, perfect. So we've already talked a bit about the process that we use to collaborate between the two middle schools. One thing I wanted to note was that the interim assessments for the SBEC interim assessments are still in progress. So we really wanted to give a performance task in seventh grade around argumentative writing. That's what we've been working on. And so we actually found a task that was similar, adjusted it to really fit with what you might see in an interim assessment, and then developed some scoring guides that were modeled on past materials. So now our district has at least one extra assessment, and hopefully more coming, that are an additional resource for students to practice these skills and read multiple texts and write something that they could feel invested in, interested in. So in seventh grade, we wrote full argumentative essays, and then eighth grade also worked on argument in a shorter piece. In seventh grade, what we noticed was that after students made really strong claims. They had a lot of feeling about bottled water and whether it should be banned. And our next steps, because we'll be working on argumentative writing all throughout the year in all different contexts, are that we really want to focus on helping students to elaborate on their feelings and on the evidence and facts that they pull. So to go beyond their feelings and use their evidence effectively. And something else that came out of our work looking at the school-wide rating is that the teachers in seventh grade really got to establish some common definitions about the quality of student work, what a seventh grade standard looks like, what certain pieces of argumentative writing should look like, and that conversation is always ongoing, but this was just a really good way to draw it out so that we can be more clear for our students and we can be more successful. We also worked on a little bit of self-assessment, and our eighth grade team is planning on kind of borrowing this self-assessment model to get their students to look at elaboration so that students can be more in control of their own writing and not just wait for teacher feedback, but really check their own work and say, where can I make this better? Where did I do really well? So that those are some things we're looking forward to in the rest of the year with our students. And I think so I just want to comment on the work that our teachers have done, not only to collaborate and create these assignments, but also the grading of the assignments. And I know, board members, that you go out often to see games and to participate in different school events. If you, the next time we're doing our school-wide writing scoring and have time during the scoring day to come by and see what the scoring process looks like, I'd really encourage you to do so, because I heard a lot of comments during the scoring day like, this is the best professional development for writing I've ever had, because the conversations are so rich during those days as teachers go through a norming process at the beginning of the day to make sure they're all in alignment with how they're scoring the essays. A lot of rich conversations come up about why we grade the way we do, why we teach writing the way we teach it, and then how can we become better at teaching writing to our students. I don't know if you've ever tried to teach someone how to write or help someone how to become a better writer. That's a really hard thing to do. And our teachers, I saw them grow leaps and bounds through the process of just one day from where they started to the end of the day. So it was a really great thing to be able to see as an administrator, that conversation that was happening, the collegiality that was built on that day, sharing writing and sharing scoring. All the teachers scored each other's essays. It wasn't just the same teacher scoring their own essays. People took ownership over all the kids in the district, and that's kind of a rare thing that you see when it's not just my students, it's all of our students as a whole.
I would just add on to that. I know that alignment matters and making sure that the kids have a consistent experience no matter what school they're at, and I think this is a step in that direction, because it created time for conversation and sharing the best practices. And I know that at the sixth grade level anyway, we shared our lessons that led up to it. We shared a lot of really useful information, and I think that process will continue. So that's exciting. Well, do you have any questions?
Or is it not time for
that?
We have the one last thing. So we haven't met our success criteria yet. We have to tie it back to the...
Can you write a story?
to explain how school-wide writing prepares students to access current college, which is on our slide that looks like this. So, just to tie back to what we had set out to inform you about, I think over the past few years, all of us have had some professional development or some professional learning that either involved David Conley's college knowledge or a mention of it in Mike Schmoker's book, Focus. And so I've heard a lot, and Sue brought these four intellectual standards to Mission Hill or introduced them to us, and they really resounded with us. But I wanted to just mention them and then connect them to the work we've been doing with our students in writing. So four intellectual standards that David Conley identifies that prepare students for college and beyond, college careers and beyond, are to read to infer, interpret, and draw conclusions, support arguments with evidence, resolve conflicting views encountered in source documents, and solve complex problems with no obvious answer. And I say very confidently that our school-wide writing assessments ask students to do all of these things, and more deeply that our instruction leading up to them really required students to do all of these things. Just in a seventh grade unit, we had students start by inferring with one text, a novel, and then brought in some articles and some graphics for them to interpret, then ask them to articulate a position and actually bring in multiple sources to support their position. So all of that instruction and all the teaching and learning that happened leading up to the school-wide writing, I think is really demanding all four of these standards from students, and we all know that these are things that we need to do daily in college, career, just regular life as well. So there's just a really strong connection between the assessment we gave, the teaching and learning that led up to it, and these four really deep and important skills. And I think as we refine our process, improve our assessments, begin to share even more across the schools, that we'll be able to help students address these standards even more deeply. But I'm really excited because we think we're off to a good start. Questions?
Okay. Jeremy.
Well, I'd like to congratulate you. This is a great, great, great show. Really appreciate your presentation. I can't tell you how important it is for me to hear from you, so welcome and thank you very, very much. It means a great deal to me. I'm wondering, as you're having such great success at the middle school level, the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level, whether you're thinking of expanding to do some articulation at the 5th grade level, or at the 9th grade level, because this is such a best practice program, and it seems to be working, that are there any thoughts about expanding it a bit? That's it, and thanks again. A great, great presentation. I really appreciate it.
I'm all for expanding, because I think it's a great process to be a part of. I've been a part of it in three different districts now, including ours. But it is a lot of work, and so one of the key things that I found in working with our teachers is there's a lot of teacher buy-in. They wanted to make school-wide writing useful and relevant to their teaching and impactful, and so I think if we can talk to other grade levels, we'd be able to sell it in that way, because it definitely is useful and impactful both for teachers and for students. That said, we're in our first year of doing this, and so we're still solidifying our spring writing assessment, so I don't think we're quite there yet where we could go confidently to other schools. We need at least 1 year under our belt with our own middle school assessments, because we haven't totally solidified our winter or spring ones, I should say. We're still in process of doing that work. So if you could give us just a little bit more time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thanks again, really.
Can I add to that response is that our high schools do anchor days, and they do scoring together as well. So and they're working on prompts that are Common Core aligned. So it's happening at other grade levels, and we wanted to highlight the work that the middle schools are doing right now.
Okay, Sheila.
Well, I really appreciate this program you're developing, and I was going to ask you if it's only been a year old. I'm hoping that this means that I'm going to stop hearing college professors complain about how their students can't write. And so I really appreciate the ways I think that writers have to be able to think, reason, and they have to be able to observe. And so what we're talking about is really a tool by which they become thinkers. I have two questions, so I'm going to ask one now, which is, since this is a year old, can we work at having some comparative data for before the program? Is it possible to do that, where before this program came along, we have some idea of how the students were doing, so that in a couple of years, we can actually compare how successful this has been?
We do have some data points from the past writing assessments. I would be a little nervous about comparing those because the assessments were really different and they weren't necessarily as aligned to Common Core. We didn't have the performance task before, so the assessments being so different will be a tough comparison. I think we'll have some comparative data, but I'm not sure it will tell us what we want to know, which is, could kids write like this before? We won't know.
Well, I know there was, since back when my daughter was in middle school, they were doing expository, or was it, I think, it's expository writing at the end of the year. So it seems like, I mean, it would just be good to have a baseline by which to compare.
We can have a baseline. A performance task in process is pretty different than what we used to ask the students to do, which was we often gave them a prompt. Here's a prompt, now it's your turn to write. We did a lot of instruction up to that. A performance task, if we do that as an assessment, involves reading comprehension also. And so there's often multiple pieces of something to read or a video to watch. And so it's a lot of integration of multiple skills. So we really are measuring something different in a lot of ways than we have in the past. But we can bring data, we can look at data of what's happened in the past. We just have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and I think that's even helpful, because then you're saying these things weren't measured at all before, and now they are. So it actually is giving a better argument.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, have the rubrics changed as well?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Everything changed. Everything's changing.
And I think that's what I want to say, is that there's pretty big shifts because of the Common Core standards in everything. So I feel like I've been teaching for like 12 years now, and it feels different. And part of what feels different is the clarity I'm bringing to the instructional task. And it's great to see the shifts that are happening. And I think there's more vertical alignment at our sites. There'll be more cross-site alignment as we all get more clear and rigorous in how we teach. And I think over time we're going to see shifts, so by the time they get to college, the professors won't be saying they still can't write. But I do think it's actually going to take time. I don't think we're going to see massive improvements in a year, but I hope by the time the sixth grade students I have, and we all have, by the time they get to eighth grade, their writing is much stronger and better, and I have confidence that it will be just in that cycle.
See, and I've learned a lot about what you're doing and how it's different from what you said.
Yeah.
So that's like kind of what I'm looking for,
yeah.
Is so that when we're saying, oh, good, now we have this better writing program, we actually know what we're talking about that's better.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that I think would be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I could go into a lot of detail about all the shifts, but you probably don't want that right now. But
that's good
stuff.
Hey, Dee Dee.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is, thank you. I'm one of those college professors who looks forward to seeing your students in my future classes. And these intellectual standards read to me as critical thinking. And at the college level, written communication and critical thinking are married together very closely. That's one comment. And these critical thinking skills cut across the content areas. And so I hope you're sharing these standards with your colleagues in the other content areas, because these are key, I think, for students to be ready for college. Yeah. So that was my comment. Thank you, and this is wonderful to see. My question is, so looking at your data, and I understand this is kind of preliminary data, your first assessment of your students' work. My question is, what are there going to be different kinds of approaches for those students that are nearly met and those students that are not yet there in terms of your taking this data and then making an iterative process of adjusting your curriculum, adjusting your pedagogy to get everybody up to that standard that you want them to be at?
I think there will definitely be different approaches for those different student groups, since we're just kind of diving in. I mean, we calibrated, we scored together, we started to notice patterns and trends, but now a lot of the work we're going to do as departments, I think, is really analyzing what was keeping those students who were nearly at the standard from being at the standard, what was setting the students who were really far from the standard apart, and then, you know, planning our lessons and units accordingly. We're really just starting that. I've actually been taking my school-wide writing home and sorting into piles and thinking about, you know, mini lessons for different groups of students, but I think that's going to be all year, many year type of work, but that we're very ready to jump into. That's kind of the idea of having this information from an instructional standpoint.
Yeah. And I mean, I know now that I'm going to shift next year, but I'm not going to do the same full, you know, 7-week narrative unit again this year. But I know some of the shifts I'm going to make based on the fact that their stories weren't, in my mind, particularly organized, and it could be because they're 11 and they like to write about wild things. But you know, that's the puzzle and the challenge and the exciting thing about teaching is to try to figure out, like, it's pretty easy to see, like, where they're struggling, and then the next step is how can I continue teaching to those places that they struggle, and that will be all year. But I do know how I want to change it for next year, for sure.
So I'm giving my students back their papers tomorrow, and because they've been scored by all different people, I really want to focus on presenting it to them as, you got your score based on this rubric, so now what can you do, what goal do you have for yourself? And I think that's something that a lot of the core teachers have been echoing and wanting to do, is help students, not just about our instructional shifts, but help students say, here's a goal I have for myself as a writer, and be really clear about what their options for those goals are and where they're going to go, so that a student who maybe scored in a not yet still feels like they have motivation, they have a goal, they have something they're invested in. So I think that work is really, we're starting to get a handle on that too, and we're going to build on that a lot throughout the rest of this year.
Yeah, I can say one more thing. So you get me talking. But I was really thinking about this because Bloomberg, right, who you guys brought to us, I went to the training on the parent self-assessment, and I feel like one of the things that I personally feel really committed to is slowing down the amount we cover so that we can actually teach the kids how they can improve and take more ownership of it, and I'm realizing how much time that actually takes. So it does mean letting go of breadth and committing to depth, because otherwise they're not going to improve as writers. I'm always scoring and telling them what their success criteria is, and they're not figuring out the improvements they need to make, they're not going to buy in and they're not going to grow. So I think both sides are pretty committed to modeling how we would assess and teaching them how to assess themselves and each other. And I think over time that will pay dividends.
And we're using analytic rubrics versus statistic rubrics. So kids can score advanced in certain categories, but overall their essay is scoring at the, you're just meeting the standard, or you can score even below in certain areas if you didn't include things. So teachers have the ability to mark all over the rubric, so then when kids get it back, it's teaching kids how to read that rubric and then how to look at their essay and be like, okay, yeah, I see why I got this score. And then even encouraging kids to challenge it. If they think they had it, to bring it up to their teacher. And we've done second reads of papers ourselves and third reads when we're not quite sure, when there's like a borderline essay. So we are encouraging students to do that as well. Look with a critical eye, read with a critical eye, look at your rubric.
Okay, Sheila and then Jeremy.
Okay, so first of all, I really like the idea that you're saying about slowing down some. Because one of the comments I was going to make is, when I deal with college students, it seems like they didn't learn to dig in, to say that thing that is not just the easy thing that sort of follows the structure but doesn't. And that's a lot of what I hear from college professors too, like, you know, the digging in. So I really like that idea. I just wanted to say that. I guess my question was, I was just trying to make sure, I think my ears are kind of full tonight, so I'm not sure if I heard this right. But in the sixth grade, you're doing narrative. You're doing not, it's more of story writing. Is that correct? And I thought I heard whoever said it say, was that you saying they're not that good at writing stories?
Well, I mean, they can write narratively. So this is what we found, because we did a lot of writing prior to the school-wide, right?
Uh-huh.
We did a lot of narrative pieces, and they did beautifully. They wrote incredibly touching character sketches about real people. They wrote beautifully about settings. I saw their writing in terms of narrative characteristics really showed up in those pieces of writing, but it actually showed up less because you give sixth graders a story, two brothers and sisters, and there's something in the crate, and it's going to go crazy. Like, that's what happened. And I noticed, like, I don't know if I got the exact data I wanted, because they got lost in the story, and they employed dialogue, and they did all those things we taught them, but there's a part of me that wants to slightly restructure something so that I see the use of narrative technique, not just trying to write a story, to write a story. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, kids can get, we didn't teach so much story structure. That wasn't the focus. It was narrative text features and the characteristics of narrative text. And we read, and we wrote, and we did all of that. But we didn't teach. It takes novelists years to write well. So we definitely didn't teach deep detail about novel story writing. That's not what we spend our time so much on.
Yeah.
So what we saw in the assessment then was some of the kids, I think, got sidetracked and didn't perform as well because it's hard to write a really good short story.
Right. So it sounded like you do that in sixth grade, but then you move to much more nonfiction, expository kind of writing.
Oh,
so that all these standards here, none of them really grasp that narrative part.
Yeah, and I said that to Julie when we came in, but, you know, it could be they're solving complex problems with no obvious answer. But I can tell you, when we're reading narrative text, we're absolutely reading to infer, interpret, and draw conclusions. I'm asking them to think about supporting their... I mean, evidence shows up in narrative text. It just looks different than it does in expository or argumentative, right? It comes in the details.
Yeah.
So it might not be supporting an argument. It's supporting a scene with evidence, and that evidence is in the detail and the words and like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh, we don't do narrative the whole year. That was just our first unit.
I'm sorry, you don't do narrative
the whole year?
Right.
It was just one. It was just the opening unit.
Yeah, I think I have a little bit of concern about that,
yeah.
But I argue with myself because
yeah.
It's an academic setting. But I wrote to him when you said that they have a difficult time writing good stories. I said, because I take a writing class now. I've been taking one for several years.
Yeah.
We all have difficult time writing good narrative.
Exactly.
But the good narrative, I hate to see it get lost because in some ways the nonfiction is simpler.
Oh.
And so I was a little worried that you just had it at the beginning of sixth grade and then it just drops out.
Oh, no.
No,
it's
no,
rooted.
No.
It's taught in every... I'll start talking.
Yeah.
So in seventh grade, we do weekly narrative writing and then also like narrative writing units. We just actually finished at Mission Hill a research-based narrative, so researching Aztec or Inca Empire and then using that research to create a rich narrative
with lots of details that were evidence of the research. So it continued. It just wasn't what the school I'm writing assessed in the fall of this year.
Right. Well, thank you. I'm really happy to hear that. And I actually think that learning to rein in narrative writing is some of what college professors are complaining about. It's not narrative, but they're seeing non-reined in writing.
Yes,
so
yes.
I'm happy to hear that it's still there. So thank you.
Jeremy.
I have two questions. One is, we seem to have a 7th grade B40 35% meeting proficiency level that's off from the other grades. And if you could choose perhaps to comment on that if you're so inclined. And the other one, and it may be related to that, and I'm hoping it's not, is the issue of teacher buy-in. And so if you could comment on that, have all teachers enthusiastically bought into this? Wait a minute, time out. It's a very valid question.
It's
and
valid.
For teachers who have their own way of teaching and have said, you know, I've been doing it my way for a long time and I'm just successful doing things my way, how are you massaging and negotiating that? Okay, thank you.
I don't know.
That's a great question. Okay. You want to talk about his last question first, though?
Yeah.
I know at Mission Hill, we have close to 100%, nearly 100% teacher buy-in, but there's always staff members who have been teaching for a long time or are very opinionated in their approach for how they're going to teach something. So regardless, the people who haven't been as enthusiastic about it have still been very collaborative and receptive about it, and also I think I saw there, you can chime in, but during the scoring process, that's when we got more buy-in. So it was like, they were collaborative, they were going along, even though it wasn't quite what they were used to, and then when we got to that grading day, they saw the benefits, and they're like, oh yeah, and you saw them start to get more enthusiastic about the process and how we can change this and how we can refine it to make it better next time.
I'll add to that. I feel like this process actually opened up some discussions that teachers might not have been willing to have because it seemed too scary or too different from what they'd done before. Mm-hmm. After a grading day that I went to, I felt like every department member was ready for next Wednesday afternoon meeting to talk about some of the things that had come up and eager to talk about them. And that's kind of a shift from previous conversations around writing. So I actually think, even if there were some reluctant participants at the beginning, that as we're kind of getting going, it opened up conversations that teachers realized maybe that they needed to have, or kind of piqued people's interest about what was going on in other classrooms in a way that just saying, like, here's what I do, take this, didn't. But starting that inquiring into our students' work was a really good place to bring some people in.
So I don't know what was behind the 35% in the 7th grade, but I do know that just in terms of all of us looking at data, that that 35% can represent a lot of different things, and so the story behind it is always the most important thing to me. A number is just a number, and what I would hope is that 35% would have brought about a really rich conversation about why that happened and what would happen next because of it. And improving the number is just part of it. It's really more about the story and what the work behind it.
Yeah. So what I know about the seventh grade for B40 was that they were asking the kids to do a writing task that they hadn't done. So they had done a lot of writing from sources, one source, and then a task from one source.
Yeah.
But for the assessment, they gave them two sources, and that really, for some reason, threw the kids.
Yeah.
So what I heard from the 7th grade teachers was that now they see they need to actually do instruction on two sources for the same kind of writing, and I'm sure they'll see
students over, you know, that's the story.
That's a good story.
So,
two perhaps conflicting sources, or two sources.
Two different articles. Presenting the same information from two different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So it required a little more connection than I think that the students had to do in the past. A lot of the Common Core is all about, you know, looking at variable sources, multiple sources, and being able to compile and problem solve and resolve those conflicts between what people say. Really new skill, and the most exciting thing I heard you say, Sue, was that we noticed that we need to do something different. We need to take a different action, and that's beautiful. That's exactly what we wanted to see happen.
Okay, well, thank you. It was a wonderful Our next item is 8.3.2, the single plan approvals.
I think I'm going to borrow what Jennifer just shared about the story behind the numbers as the frame for looking at our single plans tonight. What you'll see in a moment is a graphic that I think really illustrates not only how the single plan is constructed, but how it's deconstructed as well. So the single plan for student achievement is really a self-study. It's a way that school communities can look not only at their numbers, at their data, but the story behind that data. And then from different perspectives, not only build that narrative together of what happened, but build a plan for what should happen next. So it's what has happened and what will happen next. And we bring the single plan to you tonight for your approval. And I want to emphasize again that it's a cyclical process. So approval is a point in time, but the next time the site council meets, they're again looking at the plan and how it suits their purpose and how it supports their students, and they can make adjustments to it. So I'm going to share with you, and Eric does this so well, so we're missing him tonight, but I'm going to share with you part of a presentation he brings every year, which is to look at the requirements of the single plan, the process of building that plan, the content and the goals of the plan, and then I'll be asking for you to approve the plans for this coming year. So the plan requirements rely on the site council first developing and approving the plan, and our school site council is composed of administrators, teachers, classified staff, and parents. And again, this goes back to that graphic of multiple perspectives and points of view working together to look at the student data and come up with how should we support our students. The English Learner Advisory Committee, the parents on that committee also provide advice to the school site council. They do that throughout the year. They provide input to the goal setting of the plan. When there's student data available, the ELAP also makes recommendations based on that student data. And in addition to student data, the ELAP can make recommendations and is encouraged to make recommendations on the overall school program. So what are the components of the school program that are contributing to creating an environment in which their students can be successful? Ideally, the plan would align all other school plans, including the safety and the professional development, but it never works out that way exactly. There's always an additional plan, but we do bring into the single plan the goals around culture and climate and the professional development. The goals are based on verifiable state data. When you look through the goals that our school site councils have put together, there's also local data, but there's a component of that plan that must include the CELT, the California English Language Development Test, as well as our state data. And the plan addresses how our categorical funds will be used to improve the student academic performance. And again, the role of the school site council is to review and update that plan and budget. And then we bring it to you for approval. So the development of the plan begins with training and our council members who are elected by parents at the school site or by teachers at the school site, obtaining the input and analyzing student data. So often in the fall, The school site council is looking at the previous year's data, developing a plan and related expenditures, so if they look at that data and they see that there's a need, for example, with seventh grade writing, they might say, how are we going to support this? What can we do to support our teachers and our students in seventh grade? Bringing it back to the governing board for approval, and then once it's approved, then monitoring and evaluating. And in the past, many of our school site single plan goals were written directly towards end of the year assessments, and it made it difficult for us to progress monitor. We're moving now towards ongoing, more formative assessments so that the site council can look in January and in March and determine if the students are making the expected progress or if we need to make some adjustments in the program. And that would be where we would end. When we look at the elementary and middle school plans, what we see are goals, academic goals in the areas of reading, writing, English language development for English learners and math, and the inclusion of a school culture and climate goal. And we measure those goals through the local and state assessments as well as through surveys. The Healthy Kids survey is administered every other year, so again, we're looking sometimes at slightly older data, but we can look at patterns. We have the social and emotional health survey, which we've begun piloting for students as young as fourth grade. And then we have school culture and climate surveys that provide some immediate information that school site councils can act upon. In our high school plans, the shift is a little bit more towards completion and towards access. So here we'll see more goals in the area of, are we supporting students not only towards graduation, but towards post-secondary college and career? How are we supporting them to have those opportunities? And again, we're measuring it through local and state assessments and then surveys as well. In our small schools, this is where the font gets a little smaller, in both AFE and ARC, looking at proficiency and growth, they tend to measure that more using rubrics. And so looking at what is developmentally appropriate within a year, measuring the student progress on that rubric. They're also at AFE. They had a very specific goal around peer advocacy and wanting to see if they can increase the number of middle school students who were involved in that program. In the ARC, they not only measured proficiency and their school culture and climate, but they measured school culture and climate by attendance, participation, and surveys. So again, for students who may have struggled with or may not have felt comfortable within a comprehensive setting, it's really important to measure their participation in this alternate setting. And then at Costa Nova, we have an increase in the number of credits. So with Costa Nova, it's more of a focus on students who may not have been successful in a comprehensive school, giving them that immediate feedback around credits. So helping them to earn credits towards graduation, but also monitoring their growth in reading and writing proficiency. And they do this more through portfolio assessments and rubrics. They also had a goal around school culture and climate that was addressing the number of students who may have gone on to what they call a first agreement, which is a contract, when students may have not connected fully with school or they're showing behaviors that are getting in the way of their learning or others' learning, and looking at the impact of interventions for those students. And they had a real success there where over half of the students who were on that first contract did not progress to a second, so the intervention was very effective. In Monarch, they've developed some wonderful rubrics, and they're looking at growth in reading, writing, ELD, and math as progressing across those rubrics. And so much like we heard with middle school, they gather together and they do scoring with their teachers, looking at how are students progressing on those rubrics. And they are continuing to measure the impact of their school-wide climate and culture work through surveys, both for their students and for their staff. Included in your packet were the yes-no sheets that let us know how they did, given the goals that they had set the previous year. And again, I want to echo what our middle school teachers shared. There's the number and there's the story behind the number. And so, especially in those areas where the schools didn't meet the goal that they set, that's the work of their site council this fall, is to address that, to determine, was that the appropriate assessment? If it is the appropriate assessment, what do they need to do to help them towards meeting that goal?
Thank you. That's a lot of information. And I'm sure we have some questions. Jeremy.
Each site formats their information differently. And each site has different goals. If you'd allow me, for example, Bayview. By June 2015, the percentage of students in grades 2 through 5 achieving proficient or advanced on the Scholastic Reading Inventory will increase by 5% at all grade levels. And then we have the data. And then I thought, well, that would be really interesting to compare and contrast, for example, with De La Viega. But De La Viega says... each significant subgroup, this is English language arts, Hispanic, Latino, English learner, and socioeconomically disadvantaged, will demonstrate a 10% growth in student achieving scores proficient and above. And so one's got 5, one's got 10.
Right.
And I guess that's good, right? Clarification? I
had the same observation. I would say if this were purely a self-study, then yes, we would have different goals and we would have different metrics. But I think we're moving more and more towards alignment, again, to reference the middle school writing team, because alignment, not just for alignment's sake, but because it deepens the conversation across schools and across the district. And so I think this is a good point for us to bring back to our principals and talk about what are those metrics that we might be all using together so that we can deepen the conversation, talk about best practices.
You took the words out.
So Jeremy, I could add to that too. Sometimes, first of all, they're all aligned to the district goal, so that's where we all start, right?
Right.
And then when you're looking at your data and you're looking at the trends, so that's where you get the 5 and the 10 and the 20. So you're looking at, gosh, last year we took a 5% leap, or we hit a 10%. So you're kind of looking at what is realistic in looking at what the growth pattern has been over time. So sometimes that's where you can get the different percentages.
I'm just thinking out loud, and it's just a thought bubble. So, but for example, if we had similar formatting, and we saw that Bayview is making great strides in a program in terms of reading, and then let's say De La Viega was not quite making those sorts of strides, and this has nothing to do with any of this information.
Right.
Call it school X or Y, we could say, oh, well, what's Bayview doing that's a little bit different in terms of best practices? But it's completely impossible to do that here. And I'm hearing you say that if it was just a self-study, fine, but perhaps we could begin to have conversations where we could move schools to say, let's sort of, for next year, line this up a little bit more, or...
Yeah, and I think that's the direction we're taking with our LCAP, so that we're setting some common measures across the district and we start to have conversations about what supports student success. Again, once teachers are involved in that conversation, I think it makes more sense. If you just say we're going to align to be the same, there's not a whole lot of reasoning behind that, but if it leads to powerful conversations and some shared best practices, I think there's some value to that.
Thank you.
Sheila. So, I agree with how we could tell a lot more if we were aligned, but I find myself thinking about two things, and I just wanted to hear a little bit from you about them. One is, just a minute, I'll get it. It's a trouble with getting old. One thing is the different schools. We all know that socioeconomic status is the predictor of assessment. And so we have different schools with very different populations.
And are we in danger if we start to compare them to each other at the exact same rubric of missing the elephant in the room? And the other thing is, if we were to align them all and have everybody have the same standard, are we going to be missing something about schools being able to attempt? I'm thinking, at this moment, I'm thinking of the small schools, but I'm not only thinking of the small schools, that they have a developmental slant to how they see their children progress. And if you say, well, now we want everybody to do the same thing, are we basically not allowing parents to, you know, have that chance to use a certain way of looking at it? So I just wanted to ask you those two questions.
I think to the first point, especially with our elementary schools, there are a couple of schools that stand out and have very different populations. And where we have aligned is the requirement that all schools have goals in ELA, in math, in ELD, and in culture and climate. And as Molly pointed out, all of our goals, all of our single plan goals support our district goals. So whether or not you're using the DRA or the SRI or one of those acronyms, you are working to support student success, and to close the achievement gap. That being said, it needs to be useful. And if you are giving an assessment and 80% of your students are at or above in September, then that's probably not the right assessment you want to keep with. So I think it's kind of that tight, loose. We want to make sure that we have some commonality to foster the communication. I think a really good example of that is Westlake and Monarch are working together on Writer's Workshop. They have different populations, but they have a reason to come together and share those practices. It may not have to do with student data initially or comparing student data, but they have goals around writing. So it may be that the alignment makes more sense in terms of programs to support students, even if the metrics and the goals are different based on the student population.
That makes sense.
Okay, Dee Dee.
I would like to also say it's a little bit hard to digest what's going on across schools at the same grade levels when they're using very different measures of kind of how we're doing and how you want to move forward to address goals that have not quite yet been met. And I think that's particularly the case at the high school. They're using very different indicators of kind of success and what they're trying to achieve academically as well as in terms of socio-emotional skills. Having said that, however, I think I just have a question about some of the measures that are going to become quickly outdated. So Harvard's using the high school exit exam, which is going to become outdated. So moving forward, are there other measures that are going to be substituted in? Are we going to be using... So I have those kind of questions, and is there, you're saying there is a movement towards having at least some consistency across the high schools, across the middle schools, in terms of the indicators of success or and the goals?
One of the areas where we do see that alignment with high school is the LCAP with monitoring the participation in A-G, monitoring the successful participation in algebra. So I think one next step might be that to simplify and to look at our LCAP goals and how those could become part of the single plan goals of each site. These are the yes-nos for 14-15, and then the goals moving forward reflect the CASP data as well as the EAP is now going to be part of the CASP, so those will be brought in. Chris?
I just want to jump into... Our high schools have a different requirement than our elementaries and middle schools. And their single plans reflect their WASC action plans. Mm-hmm. And their WASC action plans come, and those goals come out of recommendations from visiting committees.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some alignment, and we ask that those still be aligned to our district goals. But we've also tried to support our high schools with having one plan. And their single plan should be their WASC option plan, and it shouldn't be something that's different. And WASC requires, as you know, participation from all stakeholders. It requires, you know, lots of collaboration. But we don't want to have our high schools have to have a single plan for student achievement that's separate from the goals that are identified for their WASC action plans for accreditation. So that's where that gets a little more complex. It's easier to align elementary and middle, and we can look at that moving forward. We've been working at alignment in a lot of different areas, and I can see a lot of value in that. And we can, to some degree, in the high schools, but there's also going to have, there's always going to be the impact of, there are going to be things that a WASC visiting committee tells the school they have to address. And that might be different at Soquel High than it is at Harbor, than it is at San Francisco.
That makes sense.
Do you have any other questions?
I just had another question. I noticed one of the schools did not have data because data was lost.
Yeah,
lost.
What is that? More than one.
So there were a couple of schools that jumped on it and got their data before DataWise went away, June 30th. So I can speak as a principal who sometimes updated my data in July and August, that some of our principals got really busy towards the end of the year. And they were assured that their data and DataWise would be available to them with Illuminate. And unfortunately, that is still not true. The data is very, very difficult to make out. So the principals who did not review their data carefully after school was out in June were not going to have that available to them. And there were a couple of principals who got on it and were able to jump onto that data bandwagon. We haven't given up on it. Curtis is still working on it, but we're also looking forward to having Illuminate from here on out and having a really stable system, consistent assessment, so we'll be able to build on those.
Thank you, Angela. Questions from the public? Okay, now on
is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve? I'll second.
Okay. Discussion?
I'm sorry, who was the first? Thank you very much.
Do we have a second? Are we looking for a second?
We got a second.
We got a second.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, student recommendation.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Okay, 6-0. Hey, we have one more item. Can we hang in there?
Yeah,
okay.
Well, sort of. My board wasn't letting me.
This one's a fast one.
All right.
Yeah.
The next item is 8.3.4, the board policies.
Okay, we're going to be current with our CSBA board policies as we have the most recent recommendations. Most of them are small recommendations based on adjustment in law. And this, we're adding an addition of a policy that we hadn't currently had before. Are there any questions about or concerns about the policies that you have for us this evening?
Only what is a BOC?
What is a what?
Sale and disposal of BOC. Just a spelling.
One set of books. Was there?
Yeah.
Thank you.
This was a book for a box.
Otherwise, no.
Is this something that you're ready to vote on this evening, or would you like to have us bring it back for the second meeting?
Ready? Are we ready to vote on this?
I believe
yes.
So. We're ready
okay.
to vote.
All right.
Yeah. We need to bring it
back. Make a motion to.
Yeah.
I move.
Okay. Deb moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a comment from the public? Student recommendations? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 6-0.
Yay.
Now we will adjourn to closed session. So we'll give it 5 minutes and we
yes. It'll be close. It should be.
What did you do to make it go over?
Oh, I have to knock it.
No. Sometimes I have to go, where do you want to go back? No, I just want to know what. Sometimes it's weird. It's not always with me. Just touch it.
But yeah, there you go. But sometimes it'll take you. Now you're something here.
Here.
Now okay. So that means that you've been open into the store, the magazine, or whatever. So sometimes I just go like this. Or touch like this. Or push.
Ah, there.
Back to the
so
board
you did that, and that worked. Okay.
But then when you go back into your board book, it's really nice space.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get stuck where, okay, what agenda am I on? What agenda? Because I can't get. So it's like settings. I need to get back into what meeting am I in? You know, so you're in, yeah, no, you're in notes. Right? See how you're in meetings, notes?
Yeah.
So in order to get out of that, where do you go? Sometimes I push hard, I go like this, like that, bring it back. So you're in what's called notes. So see,
I think.
All those meetings,
yes.
And then you go back
then
to that.
Then you go meetings.
Meeting.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. What? If you get out of here, then you can come. I'm really hungry.
Let's see how long our we'll have to report out. But if we can get in there really quickly, not unless somebody wants to take a picture.
I think it was great. I mean,
we don't have an idea. Oh my God.
Why are they working in here? Do you think
I couldn't attack my pants. I didn't notice until I got the light. It's like constant.
And every time I get in the car, I've got my thing in the car.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. I just go like this because in the light you see it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I don't think I go out.
And I brought my gray sweater because last night I was in the thing and I was in my shirt. A black sweater and the kitten had sat right on top of the shoe.
Yeah.
Just like,
yeah.
But I love my animals, so that's what
you
said.
You had a sweater. Yesterday I was talking about the cat had clawed your sweater that you were wearing.
Yeah, that's
and, yeah. And I knew because the cat does it on her shoulders.
Well, now she can get bigger, so she will leave. You'll be standing just to back of her.
How are you at clipping nails?
He said you were his new pen pal.
I am not any good at clipping nails, but
yeah.
I think
I found some really good clips.
I get my daughter on. The kitten is actually hers.
Okay.
So she has to do it, not me.
Have a nice opportunity.
Whoa. Okay.
One chair,
I think that's right.
Yeah. Nancy, I didn't sign, but I'll sign in the morning.
You know, I'm going to leave
it. Yeah.
Molly's or Molly. Nancy, it's okay if we leave our stuff out there.
Leave your stuff. I'm going to be out here picking up and doing some things anyway.
Picking up and doing something.
You know, things. Just
dancing,
things. What can I